Welcome back to What Happens Next, the podcast that examines some of the biggest challenges facing our world and asks the experts, what will happen if we don't change? And what can we do to create a better future? I'm Dr. Susan Carland. Keep listening to find out what happens next.
Women have long had a side hustle to supplement incomes to a main job. And so that's how many want-to-be influencers start. You know, they're building a brand profile, they're developing an audience online, but it's often not their main job.
I threw myself into it and I waded my way through it and, was fortunate enough to turn it into a business, but also something that I loved and enjoyed. Yes, you know, so amazing.
I think it's wonderful that women have such freedom to find expression and creatively sort of take a stakehold of something that really can be quite lucrative for some, but mostly really fulfilling, I think.
Yeah.
As I'm sure you're painfully aware, we're living in interesting times. And by that, I mean times of tremendous uncertainty and social upheaval. It's not easy, but it's also not the first time. Maybe we can think of it as a kind of growing pain, an uncomfortable period on the way to progress. The late 1960s and 1970s displayed social and economic unrest too, gradually transforming attitudes and laws for the better. One example of this was the Quiet Revolution, a slow shift in attitudes and opportunities for women in the workplace, leading to increased gender equality and expanded roles for women. Before the Quiet Revolution, traditional gender roles prevailed. Women's participation in the workforce was limited to certain acceptable professions, such as nursing or teaching. And the prevailing societal norms dictated that our primary role was as homemakers and caretakers. But women began to enter the workforce in larger numbers after World War II, and the second wave of the feminist movement played a crucial role in challenging those norms and advocating for women's rights and opportunities in all aspects of life, including work. Progress was made during the Quiet Revolution, but gender inequality in the workforce has by no means been eradicated. Often, the labour women perform is hidden or discounted compared to the jobs men perform. And as emerging technologies generate new career paths, many of those same old gender roles have stuck around. Last week, we explored the world of influencer culture, including its connection to gendered labour and the tricky dynamics of one-sided or parasocial relationships between content creators and their audiences. This week on the podcast, our guests will unpack the work that needs to be done in this area to challenge societal norms and how progress in digital spaces can help us build a more inclusive and equitable future offline too. Keep listening to find out what happens next. For a job with such a superficial stereotype, there's much more to influencing than bikinis and brunch. Between the behind-the-scenes work to capture the perfect shot, the endless admin that comes with running a business, and the invisible labour inherent to establishing and maintaining emotional connections with an audience of thousands, influencers put in the hours. And of course, because we live in a just world where labour is compensated appropriately, that means the women running these accounts are raking in the big bucks, right?
Male influencers are paid more.
Really?
Yes. On current industry rates, they're paid about 30% more than female influencers. But it can vary by platform and what they're doing, in that the pay gap is even higher on some platforms. And also, as kind of influencers are often stigmatized as frivolous and superficial, male influencers often strive to be recognized as content creators or digital creators rather than influencers.
Dr. Kate Fitch is a senior lecturer in Monash University's School of Media, Film and Journalism. Her research examines public relations and promotional culture through various lenses, including feminist and social justice perspectives.
Do you think that influencers themselves can do anything to promote gender equity or to flip gender expectations?
They can certainly flip gender expectations, but in terms of gender equity in this kind of workforce, I think pay transparency is really important, but that's hard to manage or enforce. We're not talking about a particularly unified or unionized workforce, but an industry where payments are negotiated on an individual basis, often brokered through a talent management agency. So although it's useful to understand the shifting dynamics around work afforded by social media platforms, it's a fairly precarious business model where you're reliant on corporate social media entities that can introduce changes overnight that fundamentally change the user experience, or where a tweak to the algorithms might result in lower engagement. So there's great precarity in this kind of work. And as I said, it's not a kind of unified workforce and everything's negotiated on an individual basis. That's very hard to change kind of structural inequality that results in this gender pay gap.
The usual risks of self-employment are exacerbated for influencers. Beyond the lack of industry standards ensuring pay, content creators are at the mercy of social media algorithms that can change overnight how quickly they can book their next gig and the entire internet's opinion of them. Here's influencer and content creator Liv White.
Do you ever find it stressful?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What's stressful?
The fact that I'm like an overly anxious person, I'm probably fitting the hell, just jump off.
For those that can't see, Livy's wearing a jumper that just says overthinker.
You know, I don't want to speak for everyone in the space because it is different. Yeah. But for me, having done it as long as I've done it, one, I know what it's like in any media landscape. I'm just happy to still be here, still be relevant, still be able to make an income. Also, the ebbs and flows of the industry of, you know, where is your next job going to come from, or like how much work do you have booked? Because, you know, I just like everybody, like need to, you know, want to earn an income, and that's like something that's forever on your mind.
Do you ever worry about being cancelled?
Oh, 100%. I like, especially in this day and age, when you see sometimes the I'm not, you know, the whole thing of cancel culture is like, I think about it so often, and you look at things that happen to other people and the reasons that they're cancelled. And look, sometimes I get it. There are people out there who make very, very like damaging claims and stuff. And absolutely we need to hold people to account. But a lot of the time, the stuff that I see, or see the things people being pursued for, I think going back to that original comment, you know, is sometimes rooted in its own issues and problems. Because, you know, if we can't have these conversations and we can't, you know, I definitely have censored myself a lot more. Purely out of the fear of saying or doing the wrong thing, but also like still want to be myself and still be true to myself. But yeah, 100%. Like, I think it's a concern for. If it's not a concern for you, then you're probably the person that's gonna get cancelled. So maybe that's a good thing.
Here's Dr. Kate Fitch.
Do you think then that influencer culture, does it reinforce or does it challenge traditional gender roles?
It can do both. I think they perform a function that women's magazines and other media traditionally targeting women once did, you know, disciplining people into certain gender norms and expectations around bodies, emotions, behaviour. But it is more niche now and more targeted, and there's much greater gender diversity in gender roles than previously. I think my concern here is how influencers are often brand ambassadors, so there's often a commercial element that frames content and interactions. For example, influencers have played a major role in the growing demand for Ozempic as a weight loss drug. So, you know, we have the same social stresses playing out, but very amplified within these platforms.
And do you think that influencers, particularly female influencers, face pressures or limitations on themselves because of these gendered expectations that are put on them?
Absolutely. I think they do. So female influencers tend to dominate three sectors: lifestyle, beauty, and fashion, where they primarily deliver a female audience. They tend to be aspirational. There's a lot of social mobility amongst influencers. They tend to be cool, trendy, fashionable, so they're defining aesthetics in a certain way. And there's a lot of pressure to keep posting and, importantly, to increase, continuously increase engagement to generate income. So I think there are particular pressures on their online presentations and what they do. And often that's commercially driven by their talent management agency.
The very communities these influencers build often unconsciously add to the pressure they're under. We want to peek in on every waking moment, and as fans, we love drama. But it can come at the expense of creators' mental well-being. Broadcaster and performer Jo Stanley has spent her career in the public eye.
I do sometimes think the term vulnerability isn't really misunderstood, particularly now, you know, I love Brené Brown and the work that she's done there, but for a time there was this suggestion that we all should be going into workplaces and being really vulnerable and, you know, and we love leaders who are vulnerable. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want a leader who's bursting into tears.
Every day.
You know.
Every day.
Like,
yeah.
And you do have to be psychologically safe around that. And sometimes I see people who share, you know, they share parts of themselves that almost the sharing feels performative. And I start to think, where actually is the moment in which you are just you by yourself being, rather than being through a lens? You know, they're constantly seeing themselves from the balcony rather than being in the ballroom.
Yeah, it is tricky when if you are a content creator, you have to see your life as content. So it has to be performed.
And there's never a moment when they don't, which, again, that's one of the reasons why there's no way I could do what they do, because where's the off switch? Where are the moments where you...
Where's the inner world?
Yeah. Which is, for me, inner world is like, that's how I stay mentally well, is to spend a lot of time in my inner world.
The pressure from parasocial relationships with fans who expect you to constantly generate content can be grating, and occasionally downright frightening, when your own vulnerability can leave the ones you love vulnerable too. Here's Liv again.
You mentioned how you started as a quote-unquote mummy blogger, which I hate that is a term that has negative connotations.
Yeah.
How interesting that it's always these jobs that women have that seem to be seen with derision. I want to ask you, though, if it's difficult to balance being open and authentic with keeping things private for yourself, and whether has it ever been hard to make the juggle or the decision between what you share and what you don't, and how the audience feels about that? Have people ever felt that you owe them information you don't want to give them?
Oh, absolutely. Especially in the early days when I was much more, I guess, open and honest about the trials and tribulations of motherhood, and especially when you are in that space and you are going through it and you're experiencing, you know, I had postpartum anxiety and depression. It was something that I talked about quite openly. As I've gotten older, for two reasons: one, obviously experiencing negativity online and how people can feel like, you know, you owe them this and you owe them that. My kids are getting older.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's funny because that is another thing that is on my mind every day. When I started in this space and what I've learned coming through it, I remember it would have been a year or two ago. It was around the same time that Cleo Smith went missing. And I just remember one night I could absolutely not sleep, and I went through my entire Instagram and deleted every single solo photo of my children and babies and toddlers. I don't know like what it was. I just was like, nah, we're gonna delete that.
Yep.
You know, I know that there's stuff out there, there's photos of them and stuff. But I was just like, nah, we're done with that.
Closing that door.
And I'm so mindful now, you know, they're getting older. You know, I've always sort of been considerate of like whether they want to be in content or not. And now they're getting older, they very much have an opinion on that. Some things they do, some things they don't. You know, when I was younger and when we first started out in this space, like, you didn't know. But you only know what you know.
It was very different. It was a different place 10 years ago.
It was. And you only know what you know. And it, you know, it's one of those things, I have evolved so much online. My content has evolved. I've evolved as a person. I've adapted, you know, definitely since the introduction of Reels and short form video content, I feel like that has been like my thing. And I'm like, oh, you know, this is, I love this so much more than like doing the heavy writing and really giving so much of myself. I can give the same themes, but in a short form humorous video.
Yeah.
And I love that because I feel like I'm still giving, but like not giving as much of me because it was taxing. It was, you know, really hard. So, you can only do what you can do and learn and evolve and you can change your mind and how you feel about things. So I feel like done okay. So
with all this in mind, those of us outside the industry should take a hard look at the way we think of and shrug off the work being done by female influencers. This isn't a simple hobby or even a part-time gig. It's a billion-dollar industry powered largely by women.
Women have long had a side hustle to supplement incomes to a main job. And so that's how many want-to-be influencers start. You know, they're building a brand profile, they're developing an audience online, but it's often not their main job when they start out. So they, or sometimes they already have a media profile for other things. So there's this long history, I think, of influencer culture and women's labour.
Jo sees a high level of skill in this line of work that's easy to overlook if we don't interrogate our prejudices too closely.
I have been in situations, spent time on holidays or junkets or wherever with, you know, really good content creators on Instagram. They are incredible. There is no way I could do what they do. And they spend a lot of time and a lot of, it's a very creative kind of endeavor. But I don't think that people see that behind the scenes because the skill is making it look like it is really easy.
Why, what did you see when you were with them that made you think this is really impressive? What was it?
Well, they understand story. They understand for their audience what is the heart of something that's going to connect. And at the end of the day, the only thing that connects a content creator, whether it's in radio, TV, on social media, is story. Like they just understand the creation of content that communicates a story in the space of 30 seconds or two tiles that really connects with their audience and allows, you know, that, I suppose, the bonding between what an audience sees in you and wants from you in a way that feels very real. Again, that's exciting to me. I think it's wonderful that women have such freedom to find expression and creatively sort of take a stakehold of something that really can be quite lucrative for some, but mostly really fulfilling, I think.
And in the early days of the internet, female content creators, writers, photographers, academics, comedians and more carved online spaces out for themselves because there weren't opportunities in traditional media. While we wait for television and radio to catch up, emerging media is offering women shots they've never been able to take before.
It's so surprising to me to hear that there is such a gender issue in radio because if you look at the top podcasts in Australia each week, just on the iTunes one, the Apple one, the two top ones always are Mamma Mia Out Loud and Shameless. Mm. And there's often female, all female voices in the lower tens as well. So obviously people want to hear this, and particularly women, but I'm sure there are male listeners as well and other people. Why do you think radio bosses are so reluctant to pay attention to what the audience is telling them?
I think that that's an unconscious bias, I suppose. They get used to listening to what reflects their own experience. And it's very much a, I feel as though it's a world in which this is the way it's always been done and so this is the way we will continue to do. However, this is why podcasting is such an incredibly exciting new, it's still a new medium because it is really underpinning the democratization of content, that if you want to sit in a room such as you and I are right now and create content and find an audience for yourself, then you're not reliant on whoever is sort of holding the keys to those larger platforms anymore. It's really exciting.
The quiet revolution isn't over. As new horizons open, including increasing access to education and career opportunities, women will continue to make remarkable strides in the workforce and reshape industries. But until each of us takes a close look at the work we've categorized, consciously or unconsciously, as belonging to one gender or another, and sincerely examine our own biases or inherited beliefs, we're a long way from equality. It may be a little uncomfortable. Change for the better often is. Thank you to all our guests in this series, Dr. Kate Fitch, Joe Stanley, and Olivia White. You can learn more about their work by visiting our show notes. We'll be back next week with an all-new topic. Hey, listeners, we love your 5-star ratings and reviews. Keep them coming. Tell us what you really think about a topic, or just let us know the last episode you listened to. Your feedback makes a difference. Why just listen to the podcast? Visit Monash University's YouTube channel to see a video version of What Happens Next. You can also watch this episode on Monash Lens. Visit lens.monash.edu. Check the link to listen now. Thank you for joining What Happens Next.